Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Happy birthday, dear Command Zone. Happy birthday to us.
It's the third birthday.
We are 3 years old.
Wow. Wah. We passed our terrible twos.
We're done throwing temper tantrums.
When did we hit our three-year anniversary?
I think it was like the 14th or something of July, like last week.
Really? Yeah. Oh, geez.
Actually, it might be like today as we're recording it. I think 3rd. It's tomorrow, technically. Oh,
goodness. Yeah. Happy pre-belated birthday, if that's the term.
Unbelievable. 3 years. Did you ever think when we started this thing that we would still be going 3 years down the road?
I thought we'd be done in the 100. Turns out there's still more Commander to talk about. We're on our way to 200. We're getting there, slowly but surely. Not as fast as we did the first year because of all the two-episode weeks.
Yeah, we're not doing two episodes for a week anymore.
Yeah, that was crazy times. But how's it going, everybody? You are watching and listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And today, we are going to bring you an Hour of Devastation special. Because, you know, we've been getting a lot of tweets and a lot of messages about the gods. Play them on game nights. How would you brew this god? How would you do that? So we're going to do exactly that.
We are brewing with the new gods. You know, we thought it'd be fun to sort of talk about a part of the process maybe that doesn't get as much play, right? So we're often talking about decks that are complete. Mm-hmm. In fact, we're often talking about decks that are more than just the first time they're complete. They've been tweaked, they've been tuned, because, you know, obviously we want to talk about our best decks, the stuff we're very confident of, stuff that we've tested a lot, and we want to show you guys those things. But today, we thought it'd be fun to discuss a deck idea that's not yet fully fleshed out. Now, we've done this maybe once before on the show, so I have an idea for a deck, and it's basically, it's a very JLK idea. It's basically to play all the Hour of Devastation gods, the Locust God, the Scorpion God, and the Scarab God in the same deck. Now, is it five color? Probably. But maybe not.
It's Grixis otherwise, right?
It has to be Grixis for sure, but you know, my philosophy is, well, if I'm already going to be playing my commander as a hidden commander within my deck, you know, in this case, maybe three commanders are hidden within the deck, then you know, I have the opportunity to add even more colors beyond just the colors I want, and that a lot of times that's one of the advantages that doing that gives me.
Of course, the other obvious option is having the original Nicol Bolas as your commander.
That's actually a really good point, and possible. We'll talk about that. In fact, this episode is going to be about sort of discussing, you know, honing in on the ideas and the decisions that go into crafting an off-the-wall deck, and also just sort of crafting the deck for the first time.
Learn how JLK built today on the Command Zone. Yeah. But before we get into it, it's time to talk to you about our sponsor, CardKingdom.com. To support the show, it's really easy. Just go to CardKingdom.com/Command Zone. That's the affiliate link. And when you buy your singles, when you buy your Locust/Scarab/Scorpion God/New Nicol Bolas Planeswalker, you can get it all from this website. And you know what? It's going to ship to you really fast. It's going to support the show and use the affiliate link. Just thumbs up everywhere.
Yep, you definitely want to be ordering that stuff right now and your sealed product, because if you're like me, you like to crack boxes. In fact, if you haven't seen our unboxing video, you should check that out. We have that same concept where we crack packs until we open an invocation.
What are you going to do now that the invocation/masterpieces aren't going to be
I have no idea. I'm a little bit worried about it. So if you have any ideas about how what a concept should be for our unboxing videos moving forward, since there's not invocations anymore or expeditions or masterpieces, what's the overall term for all of them?
Masterpiece? I think master. No, that was for.
Dang it!
They are expeditions.
Anyway, whatever that overall term is, they're not doing
that anymore.
Special. You know what else is special and shiny? Ultra Pro, which is our second spot. Yeah, have you seen those awesome like gravity dice or
these
heavy metal dice that they gave away at our Command Zone gathering? Those dice are some of the things that at the table I get the most compliments or comments about whenever I pull them out. And the gravity dice come in that really cool metal like metal case. So as soon as you take them out, people are like, what the heck? Where'd you get those?
Looks so cool.
Yeah. So that's something to check out. And definitely Ultra Pro is a big sponsor of the show and one of the reasons that it keeps happening. And The last way to support the show is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. You can contribute directly to the show. You can set monthly limits. You can contribute as much or as little as you like. In fact, we call out one lucky patron every single episode, and this episode is dedicated to
Alyssa McGill.
Alyssa.
Nice.
You rock.
You rock. Thanks for supporting the show. All right, let's move right on to the new episode, Brewing with the New Gods. So if you haven't already, I would suggest you go back to episode 151, the deck building template, where we talk a lot about the basic philosophies of building a deck, as well as provide a template for sort of any new starting deck. And of course, as always, we're just going to sort of skip over the really generic good stuff. So Cyclonic Rift is going to go in the deck, most likely. Vedalken Orrery better go in the deck. By the way, I've heard that card has shot up in price recently.
You should grab them now then, because that card's really good. We've been telling you for a long time.
Yeah, or hope it gets reprinted in C17, which is coming up very soon, yeah.
Yeah, obviously it doesn't make a lot of sense for us to just sit here and be like, put Cyclonic Rift in, play with Sol Ring. Obviously those cards aren't going to be something that are interesting to talk about or reasons that you build decks.
Yeah, and we can't talk about the Prophet of the Crucifix every episode anymore, so...
So the new gods are sweet.
Yeah.
And I think a deck based on all three of them is possible. So... when you want to do something like this, and I remember, what year was the experience counter commanders? Was that
2015?
So Commander 2015 had all the experience counter commanders. And I remember at that time, a lot of people were sort of tweeting, emailing, commenting at us about building a five-color deck that had all the experience counter commanders in it. And it ended up being not a great idea in my estimation. And one of the reasons was because of each of those commanders and what it did, didn't seem to be to sort of relate or revolve around, you know, the same thing. And it made it very hard to build a cohesive deck that was wanted to do anything focused in any way that they all wanted to do. Like Mizzix wants to do something totally different than what, say, Daxos wants to do. And there's hard to find any overlap between those two. So the question, the first question is to ask is this even a good idea? Are the three gods going to be good in a deck together? And I think they are, but let's read them really quick. So we can start with, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, it is the Masterpiece series.
Okay. Yeah. That's what it's called.
It was Inventions in Kaladesh.
Oh, Inventions.
That's right. Invocations in Amonkhet. All right. So the first god we're going to talk about is the one that I'm most excited for. It's the Locust God. This one, of course, it's all on the card. It's on the card.
This is the most powerful of the three as far as EDH is concerned.
Yeah. 4 blue and a red for a legendary creature, God. Doesn't say Locust, surprisingly. It's a 4/4 with flying. Now, whenever you draw a card, create a 1/1 blue and red insect creature token with flying and haste. And for 2 a blue and a red, you can loot, draw a card, and then discard a card. And every god is going to have this text, specifically from Arrow Devastation. When the Locust God dies, return it to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step. So that's their version of Indestructible this time around, where it's not going to stay on the board through a Wrath effect, but if it dies at the end step, next end step, it's going to go back to your hand so you can recast it.
So quick recap, Locust God, every time you draw a card, you make a 1/1 flyer with haste, also has the ability to loot for 4 mana. So that does draw you a card, which makes a 1/1 flying creature with haste. Very powerful. The next one is the Scarab God. It's 3, a blue, and a black for a legendary creature god, 5/5. At the beginning of your upkeep, each opponent loses X life, and you scry X, where X is the number of zombies you control. And then you can pay 2, a blue, and a black to basically eternalize something out of a graveyard. So you exile target creature from a graveyard, can be yours or your opponent's, and then you create a token that's a copy of that creature card that you exiled from the graveyard, except it's a 4/4 black zombie creature token. Oof. And then it also has the same rider clause that the other ones do. If it dies, you return it to your hand at the beginning of the next end step. So this one is a little bit less straightforward, I'd say, than Locust God, in that it cares about zombies in its first text. It drains your opponents and then makes you scry for that amount. And then it also does create zombies by sort of, what did you call that? I guess eternalizing from
eternalizing, yeah.
Graveyards. Yeah, sort of like half resurrecting stuff. Or in some cases, I guess it could make things bigger. Or, you know, if you resurrect an Oracle of Moldiah, it's actually a 4/4, not that that matters.
You get Enter the Battlefield triggers abilities, as well as you get to do some graveyard hate.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
So it's a very powerful effect, but, well, we'll talk about how maybe it overlaps with the Locust God in a second. And then the final one
is the Rock, the Scorpion God. Three, a black and a red for a 6-5. Really? Oh, I've been seeing pictures of his face plastered on the Scorpion God. Great movie. All right, Legendary Creature God, it's a 6-5 for 5 mana. This is the best one in Limited by far. Whenever a creature with a -1/-1 counter on it dies, draw a card. So that is just universal. If another opponent has a creature with a counter on it and it dies, great. So Persist creatures, take a look out. For one, a black and a red, you can put a -1/-1 counter on another target creature. And then the same rider, when the Scorpion God dies, return to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step. So, looking at all these cards, though, Josh, they're so very different, but they all share a little bit of similarity here.
Yeah, so the Scorpion God, obviously, all the gods work with themselves. So the Scorpion God wants things with 1/1 counters on it to die, so you draw cards. And it also puts -1/-1 counters on stuff, so it can sort of power itself. So you look at these three, and what I'm looking for, if I want to put all three in a deck, is ways in which they work together or similar effects. Like, what one card would matter to all of these gods, or two of the three gods, maybe, rather than, you know, you could think of a lot of cards that would just matter to one of the gods, like a zombie. Any zombie will matter to the Scarab God, but it won't matter necessarily to the Locust God or the Scorpion God. So you're trying to figure out, is there enough stuff that synergizes with all three to sort of make a deck like this viable? So let's look at, this is overlap, right? But I want to know, how do these gods overlap? The first thing that comes to mind for me is they all kind of work with Doubling Season.
Yep. So, that's why you'd want to play 4 colors, 5 colors here. Because
so we'd already maybe want to play green, yeah. Because two of them make tokens. So the Eternalized tokens are tokens. The Locust God makes 1/1 Flying Haste tokens. And the Scorpion God uses -1 counters, which also works with Doubling Season. So Doubling Season's just one card. But I'd say generally in Magic, if you can find one card that overlaps in that way, there's going to be some other cards that have to do, you know, in that same space. There's very few cards in Magic. There are some, obviously, that just, like, they're the only things in the whole game that's ever dealt with these specific things. Usually there's a bunch of cards that fit into that space, but they just deal with the same sort of mechanics or little pieces of the game in different ways.
Doubling Season is a special card because of that, because it's the language is very specific but also very broad, and it covers a lot of different things. Parallel Lives, much less so. It would not affect the counters that the Scorpion God is putting on the stuff.
Still does affect two out of the three, though. It would affect the tokens on both sides. Anointed in Procession is another one. There's stuff like, is it Primal Surge?
Yeah, Primal Surge, one that Jason Nault told everyone to get.
Yeah, he was right, as usual.
Right. Yeah, I got a bunch.
Yeah, so... Okay, so that's one way they overlap.
Two of them have text that's related to drawing cards. So the Scorpion God draws you a card every time something with a -1 counter on it dies, and the Locust God is just wants you to draw cards and helps you loot.
In fact, those two, if they were both on the battlefield, you could put a -1 counter on the Locust, and it would create another Locust and draw you a card.
On the creature,
what would happen is that creature would die, you'd draw a card, and because you draw a card, you make another Locust.
You've gone infinite, not really.
You need mana. You need a lot of mana. But that is an interaction where they work together.
Yeah.
So, yep, they both have to do with drawing cards. The Locust God loots. So it puts cards into your graveyard, and the Scarab God wants cards in your graveyard so that it can eternalize them.
A little bit less of a real connection here.
Yeah,
I think you don't always want to be exiling cards out of your own graveyard. I think Scarab God's best when you're doing other stuff. But sometimes you just need to get out, you know, a giant 10-drop for 4 mana.
Yeah, or just the effect on it or whatever. And I think at this point in the process, it's not really that helpful to worry about how powerful you think any single thing is, right? It's just you just want to list out all the stuff that may or may not overlap. So you sort of have it in your bag of tricks for later. This is something you pointed out when we were doing the set review, Jimmy, and it actually is really good for this type of deck. It's the fact that they all have that if it dies clause, return it to your hand at the beginning of the next end step. So if you listen to the show, I guess I should lay this out for people that are newer, where I like to build decks like my Nekusar deck, and we always get asked this question because we'll talk about my 5-color Nekusar deck, and people are like, 5-color Nekusar, what is that? That's a deck where I put a 5-color general in the command zone, so it's Chromat, but inside the deck is Nekusar and a whole bunch of other effects that are similar to Nekusar. So I basically built a Nekusar deck that's 5-color because Nekusar is in the 99.
Yeah.
So it's really a Nekusar deck because it behaves and functions in the way that a Nekusar deck behaves and functions, but Nekusar is not the commander. This works in Nekusar because there's so many things over the course of Magic that do what Nekusar does. There's Underworld Dreams and Howling Mine, which are basically the two cards that Nekusar is sort of a combination of. And there's many iterations of those two cards throughout the history of Magic. So I don't have to worry, like, I play Nekusar, it gets exiled, and now my deck doesn't work. But you do have to worry when you build decks like this with other cards that don't have that redundancy of effect. But with the gods, they're pretty tough to get rid of. You should always have access to them. Obviously, they can be exiled from the graveyard once they get there, but this is just way safer, it feels like.
Way safer, and getting them, another way they can get rid of them is like having you discard them, but I've not found that discard's a very popular theme in Commander in general. So in general, I think you're always going to be reliably making sure these gods can come back.
Yeah. So,
and if someone steals it, we'll talk about this later, but this deck wants a lot of sac effects.
Yes, exactly. Okay, another way that they overlap. All three of them have activated abilities
that don't cause them to tap.
So this is something that many cards refer to, and again, we'll talk about this, but just activated abilities is a thing in Magic. So it can be a theme of your deck or a sub-theme. And then the last one, and we sort of already touched on this.
Yeah. If you got infinite mana, you got 99 problems, and mana is not one of them.
Yeah, all the gods work really well with either a ton of or infinite mana. Obviously, you need some colored mana mix in there, but Locust God can basically draw your entire deck and make that many 1/1 flying haste things. I'm pretty much going to win you the game.
Yeah.
Scarab God a little less good because you have to do some work first. Graveyards have to be kind of full, but once graveyards have a lot of stuff in it, with enough mana, you can just sort of eternalize everything. You can do your Rise of the Dark Realms, of impersonation and bring everything back. It's all 4/4s, but if there's enough of it, who cares?
Yeah.
And then the Scorpion God is not as good as far as winning the game, but it can just gun down everything and draw you a ton of cards if you have enough mana. So we're looking at this list, and I'm going to go over it again really quick just so everybody's on the same page. They all work with Doubling Season. They are tokens and counters based. Two of them have text related to drawing cards. The Locust God can put things in your graveyard. The Scarab God likes stuff in the graveyard. They all have the if it dies, return to your hand at the end step clause. They all have activated abilities, and they all work really great with a ton of mana or infinite mana. So those, and there might be some other things too. Those are the things off the top of my head, and when looking at it for a little while, sort of came to the forefront. And so at this point, what I like to do is say, okay, what are some classification of stuff or categories or what I would call packages of cards that are going to hit a lot of these cards and do what I want to do? What are the pillars of this deck that I can build it around?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're going to have some one-off effects every deck's going to, but you really want to build your deck based upon some pillars of types of effects. So like Hapatra is built on the pillar of stuff that puts -1 counters on stuff, right? Rishkar is built around the pillar of, you know, putting +1 counters
yeah,
on stuff. Yeah. Nekusar is built around the pillar of making everybody draw a lot of cards.
And taking damage from
it. Yep. And then the second pillar is everyone takes damage for either cards in hand or when they draw cards. So what are the pillars of a deck built around all three gods?
And you want to have the pillars because you're not going to, it's not like your gods or your commander, you're not always going to have access to them. If you draw one of them, you're going to want to make sure the cards that you put in there still work with it. It may not be ideal. Maybe the card you drew is the best with the Locust God, but it's not going to be a dead card in your hand just because you drew the Scarab God first.
That is the excellentest of points, which is that your pillars need to be working with any one of the gods by themselves, and hopefully even better if you have multiples.
Yeah.
So there was one big pillar, and you want that pillar to be good. You want those cards in that pillar to be good on their own, because otherwise you're building on a weaker foundation, right? A weaker pillar. You want it to be strong. And I think we came up with a good one.
Well, this is one of your favorite things that you love.
And this is just a great effect in Magic, and therefore the fact that it works with the gods pretty well is just... tells you right away, I think, that the deck is viable. So it's wheel effects.
Spin the wheel.
So wheel effects, for those that don't know, we base that name on the card Wheel of Fortune, which is 2 and a red. And it says each player, it's a sorcery, it says each player discards their hand and draws 7 new cards. So this is a classification of card because many cards in the history of Magic have sort of duplicated this effect in different colors or various types of mana. And we'll often call wheel effects things that are slightly different. So like winds of change, some people will call a wheel effect, but that's slightly different, right? Winds of change, you actually
only draw.
Shuffle your hand back into your library and then draw the amount of cards that you had. So it's two things about it are different. You're not discarding your hand, so that stuff's not going to the graveyard, and you're not drawing seven.
Yep.
You're drawing the amount of cards you have in your hand after you play Winds of Change, and everybody else is drawing the amount of cards they have in their hand when you play Winds of Change. So it's not like a set number of cards. I think for this instance, we want only the wheel effects that put things in your graveyard, because the wheel effects are hitting two of the gods very well. They're hitting the Locust God, who cares about drawing cards, and the Scarab God, who cares about having a bunch of cards in the graveyard.
Yeah, very important for other people to put their hands in the graveyard here, because if you're just making everyone, even though Winds of Change only costs one red, that's not the point.
Yeah, because it's not actually synergizing with anything except one god.
Yeah.
Whereas Windfall, like you accidentally, Freudian slip, but you're correct.
Yeah.
Windfall does basically do what Wheel of Fortune does.
Yeah.
There's a lot of these. There's Dark Deal, Whispering Madness, Reforge the Soul. There's also creature versions like Magus of the Wheel.
Yeah.
And this one is a really good one, partially because it can come out the turn before the god comes out and then be activated the same turn that you play the god.
Yeah, one thing you don't want to necessarily do is discard the god from your hand, because that's not going to trigger the effect to get it back to your hand at the end of the next end step.
Right. So Memory Jar is a card where you play it. It's a 5-drop artifact. Then you can tap and sacrifice it, and everybody sets their current hand aside and draws 7 new cards. And at the end of the turn, they discard those cards that they drew, anything they couldn't play or didn't play, and then they pick up their original hand back. So you're basically causing a bunch of cards to go to the graveyard. And at the time you do it, you're drawing those cards and you have access to a bunch of cards for that turn. This works really good with the Locust God, just because the turn you play it, you could get 7/1/1 flying haste things for 0 extra mana after you play it.
Pretty good.
Yeah. So the wheel effect to me is the pillar of the deck, because it's also card draw.
Yeah.
So we're overlapping with what is one of our always present main pillars of the entire format, right? We always talk about every deck needs card draw and mana ramp. Well, if one of the pillars of your deck also sits on the same place as the pillar of every EDH deck, now all of a sudden your overlap is just great.
Yeah.
So my card draw is actually synergizing with normal stuff in my deck. It's like, now I just have so much more room to do cool other stuff, because instead of two pillars, I've got one big one.
Not to mention wheel effects in general are just good. If you're using the most out of them, if other players don't synergize with their graveyard that much, or if they've just drawn a bunch of cards, a wheel effect is a great way to equalize stuff and also just give you a lot of fuel for your Scarab God.
Screws up their plans too, like if they're building towards one certain effect in their hand.
Yeah.
It's just so good.
Seeing someone tap out for a combo piece and knowing that they're holding the other one, it's like you're just ready to drop a wheel effect.
So the second pillar, and again, we're setting these on the mana ramp and card draw, right? Because what do we say? They all work, all the gods work with
tons of mana
or infinite mana.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I want to rewind really quickly here. And Terry, you can just leave in this little mistake. But the other great thing about wheels, to rewind really quick before we go on to the infinite mana.
It's mankind's greatest invention.
Is it that or fire?
Oof.
It's a tough one.
Fire wheels.
I mean, you're a red player. You got to say fire, right?
That's true. But Wheel of Fortune is a red card, so.
One of the other great thing about wheels is, remember, we're playing a deck where the commanders are actually inside the deck.
Right.
So what does a wheel do? It helps you find. It digs through your deck very quickly. And so if you don't have one of the gods in your opening hand, if you do get one of the wheels, you're going to go 7 more cards deeper.
Yeah.
And you have a good chance of finding one of the gods. And if you don't, maybe you found another wheel and you can go 7 cards deeper again. And so it just has a good chance of helping you find the cards that you need.
Not to mention, if you know, this next category we're talking about is tons of mana. If you're able to just drop your entire hand and then have a wheel and draw back up to 7, it's pretty good.
So good. So yeah, it synergizes with everything we're going to do. So let's talk about the tons of / infinite mana generation category.
Maybe we should rename pillar to monolith. Like the monolith of this deck.
The monolith of this deck. I like it.
Yeah. Well, so there are tons of ways to go infinite mana in EDH. A lot of times it's very much just colorless, but you know, Basalt slash Grim Monolith are both mana rocks that are cheap to cast that give a lot of mana, but they don't untap unless you do a certain clause like or like a mana vault. But if you have something like Power Artifact, Rings of Bright Hearth.
Yeah, Mana Reflection. So there's a whole bunch of ways to go infinite with Basalt and Grim Monolith. And because we don't know what colors we are, we don't know who the general is, we're kind of open at this point to, you know, any of these sort of extreme amounts or infinite amounts of mana combos. And you'll notice we haven't even talked about who the commander of the deck is yet, because we're going to decide based on what effects we want in our deck.
Yeah.
And so...
and what colors have to be in there.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well, I really want these this package of, you know, for my... infinite mana generation package in the deck, and that requires these colors, so that's going to steer me towards this general or whatnot. So yeah, Basalt and Grim Monolith, Power Artifact, Rings of Bright Hearth, infinite untapping type of, that creates infinite colorless mana. Another package might be the Palancron stuff.
Yeah, right? Palancron, this is just like known for going infinite.
Right.
It's just a giant illusion that when it enters the battlefield, you untap up to 7 lands, and then you can bounce it to your hand for 4 mana.
So... it costs 7 to cast, it costs 4 to bounce it, but you're untapping lands when it comes into play, 7 lands. So normally that's just going to create 7 mana, but if you can ever make it so that your lands are tapping for like double, so there's all kinds of combos, right? Just like Mirari's Wake, Mana Flare, Zendikar Resurgent, they all make your lands tap for twice as much
twice
mana.
As much, yeah.
Now all of a sudden you can play Palancron, bounce it to your hand, play it, and it's possible to come out ahead on the transaction.
Right. If you untap 7 normal lands and you tap them for double, you get 14 mana, where it takes 7 + 4, 11 mana to bounce Palancron back to your hand and cast it. So you're gaining 3 mana each time. And if you do it correctly, you can make it any combination of colors as long as you're making 4 total blue, 2 to cast Palancron and 2 to bounce him.
You can also do it with High Tide. There's some other ways to do it depending on what colors you've got available to you. So that's another like very common infinite mana, tons of mana. Package.
Another way to make a ton of mana is untapping things like your Basalt Grim Monolith with Fate Stitcher, Kiora's Follower. You put in Krosim Restorer, which is one of my favorite untappers. There's also Gilded Lotus. Is Krosim Restorer the one with
Threshold?
Yeah, Threshold. So,
Threshold works with the wield effects.
Yeah, exactly. What like that's a great synergy. So Threshold, it can tap to untap up to 3 target lands if you have 7 more cards in your graveyard, which you should have if you're playing a lot of these wheel effects.
So,
pretty great.
Krosim Restore is something where, like, especially if you have, like, bounce lands, now all of a sudden maybe you're tapping Krosim Restore, you're untapping 3 lands, but that's actually creating, like, 4 or 5 mana. Mm-hmm. And then with that 4 or 5 mana, maybe you're powering something, you know, like a Staff of Domination, or maybe you've got an aura that allows you to use a mana, like Pemmon's Aura or something, to untap the Krosim Restore. So one of the mana you're creating is untapping the Krosim Restore, but you're gaining 4.
Right.
Yeah. Synod Artificer. Artificer?
Yeah.
Is another creature. It's 2 and a blue. It either taps to, you tap X and tap it to tap X target non-creature artifacts, or, and this is the important one, you tap X and tap it to untap X target non-creature artifacts. So you can start untapping your Gilded Lotuses and your Monoliths, and then if you use some of that mana again to untap the Synod Artificer and do it again, you can, these are these loops you get into. Fate Stitcher does it too. Obviously, Kiora's Follower.
Yeah.
So this is a package of stuff that's sort of like going into crazy shenanigans with just untapping and tapping the same things over and over again, including your lands.
Yeah, and Kaidel you put down here as well. If you're going to be drawing a ton of cards every single turn with wheel effects, or if you're just going nuts with the Locust God, then Kaidel is going to tap for a ton more mana. So
yeah, I put a question mark by Kaidel, and part of the question mark was, should Kaidel be one of the commanders?
Oh, that's right.
In which case, commander. You partner it with the other colors you need. You'd be relegated to 4 colors maximum at that point, but maybe that's fine. Probably won't do that because I built a Kaidel deck and I didn't find it super fun because it kind of played out the same every time. But this is a possibility for a deck like this that wants a ton of mana. Kaidel does have a ton of ways to go infinite on mana.
Yeah, totally.
And then I put Gemstone Array, question mark. Because if you go the Monolith plan, the Grim Monolith, Basalt Monolith, infinitely untapping, you're going to end up with infinite colorless mana. But all the gods have colored activated abilities.
Right.
So the Fate Stitcher plan and the Palancron plan both give you infinite colored mana. These are far from the only infinite mana packages, too. There are many in the history of Magic. There's like World Gorger combo, dragon combos, and all kinds of crazy stuff where you create infinite mana. These are just kind of off the top of my head.
I would suggest Googling how to make infinite mana in Commander. And boy, will you find yourself satisfied with the number of answers you get. There's tons.
I would say I would lean towards the Fate Stitcher Cures Follower plan, and you might be able to actually sort of combo that or pair it with the Grim Monolith untapping plan, because they all have to do with activated abilities, which also the gods do. And so a lot of the cards that might synergize with those cards are also going to synergize with your gods. Like Rings of Brighthearth is a card that's going to synergize with the gods' activated abilities, with the Cures Follower and Fate Stitcher activated abilities. And that's a card that also synergizes with Grim Monolith, Basalt Monolith, and that kind of stuff. Things like Illusionist Bracers. We'll talk about some of these cards later. But that's sort of where I'm leaning for the package as far as infinite and tons of mana.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
Again, we're just in the planning phases, so maybe that's not what's going to be chosen, but that's where I would sort of lean at this point.
Well, fortunately for us, both of these first pillars slash monoliths are great because they fit into our two most important things you need to put in every EDH deck, card draw and mana ramp. So if they're already synergizing with your commander, you're going to be... I mean, it's going to be a more fun experience, that's for sure. I'll say that much. Just because the deck works. It's not just like, I'm just card drawing because I need cards. It's I'm card drawing because... some of these cards are really important for making, like, my Locust God just gets turned on every single time I do card draw.
Yeah, I think it's very possible that you could sort of wheel a couple times, get the Locust or maybe even the Scarab God into your hand with one of these crazy tons of infinite mana type combos out, play the God, and on the same turn, activate it infinite times.
Yeah.
And maybe you just eternalize everything that's been put in the graveyard from the wheel effects. That's not going to instantly win, but you're going to have a crazy insane board at that point. And it's going to be like, listen, you guys got one turn, good luck.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's Locust God, maybe you could even win on that turn. Scorpion God, you could just shoot everything down and draw a ton of cards and be sitting pretty. So all those play patterns seem pretty strong to me.
Yeah. And, all right.
Yep, go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say the next pillar is, of course, finding your actual commander, because if there are three of them are buried in the deck, you're going to want to grab them out as soon as possible. So, of course, you have Demonic Tutors. You got pretty much all the tutors if you want to use them. Worldly Tutor is a creature tutor specifically. Unfortunately, we can't do like enchantment tutors like you would with the Theros gods, because they were enchantment creatures.
Yeah, because these guys aren't enchantments,
But still, there's plenty of creatures that can do it, like Captain Sisse, you wrote down here, is a great person to go find yourself a legendary creature. There's also Thalia's Lancers.
Yeah, that's a good one. Enter the battlefield, find a legendary. Captain Sisse stands out to me because if we're already leaning towards this activated abilities thing, Captain Sisse is an activated ability. It would also work with Illusionist Bracers and Rings of Brighthearth and some other things we're probably likely to have in the deck, in which case, go get two of my gods. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Not to mention if you just, you know, have other legendary creatures in there. For instance, if you did play Kaidel in the 99, you could also find her out as well. Yeah. So
Fate Stitchers and Cures Followers also synergize there. So Captain Sisse seems like a shoe-in.
Get in there.
So
seems like we really want to play five colors with Captain Sisse.
Green
and white.
And that'll be a consideration. Maybe we don't, because we don't want white. At the moment, I don't see a lot of white in the cards that we've talked about. Maybe like Anointed Procession and Captain Sisse are the only two cards we've mentioned that have white. Is that true?
We didn't even announce Anointed Procession, I don't think.
Yeah, we just talked about it a little bit with the doubling season thing, but you're right. So maybe white is on the like just on the outskirts of like maybe we don't need it.
Yeah.
So you found your commanders. Another thing these decks always need is to keep their commanders around. Now, we talked about how these gods naturally like to stay around because when they die, they come back to your hand.
Yeah.
And they're just harder to get rid of. But there are, like you said, people steal stuff. People exile things. People can exile stuff from graveyards. That one's the scariest, and I'm going to worry about the least. But as far as like it's on the battlefield and now it gets exiled, that's horrible.
Yeah.
So, or it gets stolen. That's awful. So I want to protect myself from that stuff. And
Path to Exile and Swords to Plowshares are very commonly played in this format. And they're put into decks so they can get rid of gods.
Yep. So we need some sacrifice effects, because that's going to save us from paths and things like that. And I want, ideally, my sacrifice effects to be free.
Yeah.
So that I don't have to hold mana open.
What if they gave you mana?
That would be ideal. What could possibly do that?
Both of the altars, Ashnod's and Phyrexian. Ashnod's gives you colorless mana. Phyrexian gives you colored mana. So this is another way to go infinite with mana generation because, you know, there's a lot of... We were talking about this with the Locust God. If you have one of these altars out or if you have, like, a skull clamp out, you're just essentially sacking things to make more mana and then using that mana to clamp something out. You know, there's a lot of different things you can do here with these altars. But most importantly, right here, you can protect your commander.
But I like what you said because they do synergize still. So if I eternalize something and it just sort of gives me extra mana on the following turn because of the altars, that's good too.
Yeah.
Goblin Bombardment is another one, which is a way to sort of get past some effects like propagandas and things that wouldn't allow you to attack or make it tough to sort of win games.
And it's only a 2 mana spell
and
too.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
It's super powerful, especially with the Locust God.
So those are Goblin Bombardment, we should say, allows you to sack creatures to deal damage. Ashnod's and Phyrexian allow you to sacrifice creatures to create mana, either colored or colorless, depending on the altar. So those are sort of some ways. And again, we're not going to talk about every sack effect. You know, I might add in fewer or more. Mm-hmm. Those feel like they're definitely in. Do we need more or less? Who knows at this point? But there are many to sort of choose from. The next category is, I'm just calling ideas in the ether. So these are just... At this point, we sort of know we want the things we've talked about. We want wheel effects as our card draw, mostly. We want to create a ton of mana to activate our abilities a million times. We want to be able to find our commanders, and we want to be able to keep them around so they don't get exiled or what have you. And now we're in the situation where, like, okay, that's sort of the basic stuff we need. Now there's a bunch of stuff we could have, and we're going to have to try and decide which of it we want to do, what's sort of better or worse, because there's a ton of choices.
Is it good enough? That's the big question. I really like that you wrote that here.
Yeah, is the stuff good enough to do? Because there's a lot of stuff you can do, but is it good? I don't know. And does it overlap with multiple gods, or does it seem to work together? That's going to be a consideration. Is it in the colors that we're thinking? That's a consideration. So all these ideas are swirling around, and we're just going to go over some of them without knowing at this point which ones we're going to choose or are actually going to go in the deck. So
I think this one has to go in the deck, though. This is a card that I thought about as soon as you mentioned the idea to me. It's Training Grounds. So we're talking about stuff that deals with activated abilities. Training Grounds is a 1-blue enchantment that just says activated abilities of creatures you control cost up to 2 less to activate. And this can't reduce the amount of mana to something to less than 1 mana. So at the very least, it goes down to 1. But, you know, this was in your Kaidel deck. This was in your Vile Smasher
Thrasios deck. So good with Thrasios, yeah.
And it really makes a huge difference because the Locust God costing 4 mana to activate is a lot, but 2 mana is not that much. Scarab God costing 2 mana is absurd. And even making the Scorpion God cost 2 mana is really good. Even though it can't take all of the colorless away, it's not full value out of it.
All the colored away, yeah.
Yeah, but it's still great. It's like this affects every single one of the gods, and it makes your game plan that much smoother for just one card and a 1 mana spell.
Yeah, so there's an artifact that's similar to Training Grounds called Heartstone. It just reduces the activated abilities by 1.
Hearthstone. This was printed all the way back in, Legends or something? Stronghold.
I'm pretty sure it was printed before World of Warcraft even existed. But these cards do seem very good. They deal with activated abilities. Again, if we're going to have other things too with activated abilities, like Palancron, that's an activated ability.
Right.
Things like that, then all of a sudden it gets even better because our cross synergy is great. So what's the other card that I put in there?
Illusionist Bracers.
Oh, so we talked about this already. It's similar to Rings of Bright Hearth in that it copies an activated ability, but this one has to be equipped onto a creature, so it can't copy the Grim Monolith, Basalt Monolith stuff.
This is the only one that I'm kind of not potentially all the way in on just because it costs 3 mana to equip. And I've played this in a lot of decks. I always want to put it in a deck because it seems very powerful, but it usually just is a little too clunky to really get you the effect that you want.
There are certain cards that it's amazing on, though. If you get it on a Fate Stitcher, then all of a sudden you can untap as many things as you want because the Fate Stitcher... For those that don't know, Fate Stitcher is a creature that you tap it, and you can either tap or untap a permanent. Well, if you put Illusionist Bracers on it, you can either tap or untap 2 permanents. One of those permanents can be the Fate Stitcher itself.
Yeah.
So now you can untap everything on the board because you tap the Fate Stitcher to untap something, and the Illusionist Bracers copies it, and you untap the Fate Stitcher. Now it's untapped, you do it again, you do it again, you do it again. That's easy infinite mana combos.
But it's great. You can just untap. You can make infinite mana with this.
It works with Cure's Follower in the same way. And, you know, even something like Captain Sisse or whatnot. You know, and is it really bad to put it on the Scarab God and basically eternalize 2 things for the cost of the same cost. It's it's pretty good.
Yeah, especially if this is late game. Oh my gosh.
But I hear what you're saying. It might not be efficient enough. So it's a maybe. Mm-hmm. It's a maybe. And also, if we're not going down the activated abilities route, then all that stuff maybe doesn't apply. Again, it seems at the moment that we're leaning towards activated abilities, but maybe not. Here's another category.
Token doublers. We already talked about this.
We talked about doubling season, parallel lives, anointed procession. I put in parentheses Sliver Queen here because I think if you're going this route...
Then some people are cheering at home.
Yeah. I think if you're going this route, then Sliver Queen could possibly be your commander, even though it's not a Sliver deck.
Right.
Because that makes tokens, and all of a sudden, if I'm already going to have doubling season, anointed procession, parallel lives, primal surge, all things that double the amount of tokens I get, and some of them double the amount of counters of any of plus one, negative one counters I get. Sliver Queen is you pay two generic mana and you make a 1/1 sliver, and you can do that as many times as you've got mana. So it works with one of our other pillars, which is create infinite mana.
Mm-hmm.
So that's and a possibility.
If you got Goblin Bombardment in there too, or if you're playing Skull Clamp, which you should, then you are off to the races.
Yeah, I think you got Anointed Procession out, you Locust God, you Wheel, you make 14 1/1s.
Wow, you're making a sliver deck without slivers.
Yeah, and then people you get into the, of course, if you do the Sliver Queen thing, you might get into the situation, well, like, I may as well have put a couple slivers in there. So that's a slippery slope that I'm worried about, similar to the Kaidel thing, whereas if I put Kaidel as the general, then all of a sudden I might be sort of, it might be hard for me not to make a Kaidel deck out of it. And if I put Sliver Queen at the helm, it might be hard to not make it into a sliver deck. But that is an option.
Yeah.
And then if you're going to do tokens anyway... Do you want a bunch of token payoffs? Or maybe even if you're not going to do token doublers, the token payoffs might be good enough. So I'm talking about things like Purphoros or Impact Tremors, which both sort of ding all your opponents when creatures come into play. Well, Eternalize from Scarab God and the Locust God. I mean, think of the Locust God with the Wheel effect and Purphoros out.
See, that is nuts, right? That is one of the most powerful things you can do in the deck. However, I think that the token payoffs is, it's like almost taking two steps away from one of the pillars. And at that point, you're like holding on by a little string. You're like, hope this works, because this doesn't really work very well with the Scorpion God. Doing the token payoff things, Purphoros is definitely...
It could work very well, the Scorpion God, though, if you had the Locust God out, right?
Right.
We do that thing what I'm talking about where you put a negative one counter on your Locust God, on your Locust. It kills it, draws you a card, and then that makes another Locust. Trigger Purphoros. Do it again. If you had infinite mana. Again, is that a pie in the sky idea? Seems like it is.
Well, I mean, saying like having, so you have to figure out like how often can I get infinite mana? Because if it's a very attainable thing, then I think you can really dream big with this deck. Because if you're like consistently always making infinite mana, then all of these ideas are that much better. Purphoros is an incredibly powerful card, and I think it is a good include in this deck. But then if you're having to cut cards and you're like Purphoros or Goblin Bombardment, I would be like, keep Goblin Bombardment, get rid of Purphoros.
Yeah, one's just going to be way more good in more scenarios.
Yeah, the same goes for Mana Echoes here, which is incredible with the Locust God. Mana Echoes is a card that gives you extra mana for every creature type. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield, for every creature type that shares a creature with it, you get more mana. So with the Locust God, you're just pumping out more and more mana because you're getting more and more Locusts.
But and you're using that mana to maybe activate it and draw more cards, make more Locusts, get more mana. But you're right. If that's not like, if making a ton of tokens is not the main goal of the deck, then maybe you don't.
Yeah.
I put Metallic Mimic in, which is just if you name insect, right? They're flying insects.
Yep.
By the way, I want to call out something, which is that there's this really cool nickname for the Locust God that somebody was saying, and I don't know who to
give it. You were trying to find out on Twitter.
I tried, and I couldn't figure out who's it's from, but the nickname for the Locust God is Niv Cricket, which I just think is so good. So whoever came up with that, kudos. I wish I knew who you were. Yeah. I found out it's not Brian David Marshall, who I immediately assumed it was because he likes nicknames like that. And it's not Jason Ault, who's the person I originally heard it from.
Niv Cricket is so funny.
Niv Cricket. Anyway, sorry to derail you, but if you name Insect with Metallic Mimic, then now all of a sudden you're making 2/2 Flying Haste, and it's a 2-drop Metallic Mimic is. That seems, again, but is it worth it? You could also name Zombie, obviously, for the Eternalize.
Right.
The difference between 5/5 and 4/4 not as big as 1/1 and 2/2 for a flyer.
Yeah. And it's also like, are you in a creature-heavy meta? Are you going to kill people by swinging at them in the air with your Haste guys, or are you often propaganded out of the game so you have to sack them instead? In which case, Metallic Mimic is just not that great.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, then there's just the plain old normal pump my token stuff. So Coat of Arms.
Yeah.
It's pretty good with the Zombies, or really good with the Locusts. I put Craterhoof Behemoth.
Hey, we could be playing green. Why not?
Well, also, you can eternalize it with the Scarab God.
That's right. You can eternalize someone else's Crater Hoof Behemoth.
Yeah. That's a really good point, too. Do I need something like Crater Hoof, or can I have a decent chance of finding it or grabbing it from somebody else?
Right.
But again, you could loot it away and then eternalize it the next turn on a, you know, way before you would normally be able to cast it. That's a possibility. So, okay, we've got... So far, we explored activated abilities, token doublers, and token payoffs. And but there's a whole nother way.
I'm all about this one.
You could go with Mill.
Yeah, so Mill works obviously very well with the Scarab God, but it also works really well if you're trying to, like, you know, essentially sacrifice things. Altar of Dementia is incredibly good. So Altar of Dementia is just a card where you sacrifice a creature and a target player puts a number of cards equal to that creature's power from the top of their library into their graveyard. So if you're making infinite mana and you're propaganded out and you don't have like a Goblin Bombardment with Locust God, it's like, well, I can just Altar of Dementia someone out.
Or Scarab God with unlimited mana, right? Because you eternalize something, sacrifice it, Altar of Dementia, that mills more stuff. Now I can eternalize more stuff, mill you more.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can also eternalize away the problematic shuffle my graveyard into my library stuff.
Right.
So you can sort of, it'll take longer.
When that trigger's on the stack, yeah, you can snipe it out of there before it gets shuffled in.
Yeah, they'll still shuffle, but now they don't have the Blightsteel Colossus the next time that you go to mill them out. Yeah, Altar of the Brood is another one, which anytime another permanent enters the battlefield under your control, then everybody mills one.
Yeah.
So that could be
they're so cheap. It's 1 mana, 2 mana to play these spells.
And with the Locust God, you could pretty easily put 7 to 14 locusts out in one turn, and now all of a sudden, if you've got infinite mana, you're just eternalizing, and every time you eternalize, that makes everybody mill one. So that's kind of an engine.
Pretty crazy.
So that stuff seems pretty good. Then there's just pure mill stuff, like Mind Grind.
Yeah. X blue black. Each opponent reveals cards from the top of their library until they reveal X land cards and puts all cards revealed this way into the graveyard. So if you Mind Grind someone for like 20, you're just getting their whole deck.
Basically. Also, remember, our deck already wants to create infinite mana.
Yeah.
So this could just be a win condition even without the gods.
Yeah.
Again, depending on if somebody has a Blightsteel or there's creatures and effects in the game where if they hit the graveyard, they make you shuffle your graveyard into your library.
Mm-hmm.
Which sort of saves you from mill. But with the Eternalized Scarab God thing, you can at least make it so the next time you do it, they can't do that, basically.
You want to talk about Magic Christmas Land?
Yeah, here's...
So Dread Summons, X black, black sorcery. Each player puts the top X cards of their library into their graveyard. For each creature card put into a graveyard this way, you make a tapped 2/2 black zombie creature token. But what if you had Fate Stitcher with Illusionist Bracers on it? You can untap all of them.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. You'd need haste, but I think Anger's a good...
candidate
to go in the deck because you're already Wheel of Fortuning, and Anger is a card that if it's in your graveyard and you have a mountain, all your stuff gets haste. So I think Anger is probably an auto include just because of eternalizing stuff, and it's easy to get into your graveyard. Also, you can loot it away with the Locust God. So.
Yeah, not to mention it's great with Fate Stitcher and any of those untappers. The fact they can activate their ability when they come into play is huge.
And Dread Summons, again, if you're creating infinite mana, you can mill everybody infinitely. And even if they shuffle their graveyard back into their library to avoid it, you're still going to get a million zombies. So
going to make a lot of friends this way.
Yeah. So, okay, Mill's another way to go. I don't know. Maybe. It sounds fun. But
yeah. Sack them all to Altar of Dementia. Oh, my goodness.
It really only synergizes with the Scarab God. It doesn't synergize that much with Locust or Scorpion. So
no.
I sort of... But if you are going to... But it is very powerful, right?
Yeah.
And it actually synergizes with the infinite mana better than the other stuff does, right? So I'm not sure at this moment. If you're going to do mill, similar to if you're going to do token doublers, you want token payoffs. Well, if you're going to do mill, you probably want some dredge or graveyard type shenanigans.
Yep.
So now we've already got wheel effects putting a bunch of stuff into our graveyard. If we add on to that with a bunch of mill stuff, do we want like Splendid Reclamation? Gitrog Monster?
Yeah, maybe.
Every time Crucible? I wheel, do I want to draw an extra card with Gitrog? Or then eventually do I want to just put all those lands that have hit the graveyard onto the battlefield with Splendid Reclamation? I mean...
Are you playing Crucible in this deck then too?
Yeah, that's...
Or the new Crucible, Random Up Excavator from Hour of Devastation? Everyone pick him up?
Life from the Loam? Are we going as deep as like Dakmor Salvage type stuff? Which, it's a land that hits the graveyard and now I can dredge when I want to and self-mill.
This is not a bad idea.
This is where you sort of... fall down the rabbit hole and you're not... This is where a lot of deck building for me comes in. It's like too many ideas and it's hard to know which one to hone in on.
I do agree with Treasure Cruise though and Dig Through Time.
Right. So the next area is sort of just it's not dredge, it's just graveyard recursion type stuff or playing with my graveyard. So Treasure Cruise is great in any deck that's just going to be self-milling a lot.
And wanting to draw a lot of cards.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes you just hard cast it too. Why not?
Yeah, why not? Dig Through Time, same thing. Then what about Past in Flames? Mm. I'm going to have a ton of wheel effects in my graveyard. Past in Flames gives them all flashback.
Mizzix is Mastery?
Maybe. Then what about like Geth? Geth is another card that does very similar things to the Scarab God.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. It steals stuff. But in this case, oh man, you could just build a deck around Scarab God Geth.
Yeah.
Where you just steal everything. Well, out of graveyards.
Yeah, Geth is absolutely in the Scarab God deck, right? But Geth works really good with infinite mana.
Yeah. Very good
so,
point.
So, yeah. Anger, we talked about. Genesis is another one that is a creature that's, when it's in your graveyard, it kind of allows you to get any other creature out of your graveyard.
Yeah, you get the, at the beginning of your upkeep, if it's in your graveyard, you pay 2 in green, and you can return a target creature card from your graveyard to your hand.
So that allows you, in those instances where maybe you had to discard one of the gods or something else important in there that you want to get out, Genesis could allow you to do it. Here's an interesting one. It's Hunting Grounds. I've always had this on my radar. So this is also a thing that I do when deck building. I don't know if you do this, which is at some point, I just kind of try and throw in the cards that I've always wanted to use and just see if, well, is this the deck where they finally make it?
Yeah.
And this Hunting is Grounds one of those cards.
Well. Anytime it says Threshold, I'm like, oh, God, the Threshold is so good on this card. Oh, but I usually don't have Threshold when I want to play it.
This card only has Threshold. It literally does nothing. So it's an enchantment for a green and a white. It has Threshold, so it only works if you have 7 or more cards in your graveyard. Hunting Grounds has... Whenever an opponent casts a spell, you may put a creature card from your hand onto the battlefield.
Whoa, that's actually pretty sweet. I mean, look, you play Hunting Grounds turn 2, turn 3 you wheel, and then you just start dropping gods from your hand if you drew well.
Yep. Seems pretty good.
Yeah, not to mention there's a lot of Threshold cards that also let you get cards back from your graveyard. So, you know, you could play a Threshold deck if you're going to go dredge slash graveyard. That's a little, I think... I mean, we're definitely going into the time to dream big.
Yeah, exactly.
But... You know, it's
maybe,
fun.
Maybe. It also depends. Like, a lot of these plans don't have as many creatures as some of the other plans.
Right.
So if you went in one direction, then maybe that card's really good because I have a ton of creatures in that build.
Right.
But in this other direction, maybe I don't have a lot of creatures, and so therefore Hunting Grounds is not as good because I'm just unlikely to have a lot of creatures in my hand.
Yep.
And then the last thing was, do I need my own shuffle my graveyard into my library type effects? So do I want Blightsteel, original Kozilek, original Ulamog? There's a few other Eldrazi and those type of cards that have that clause. If it, you know, is in your graveyard, you shuffle your graveyard into your library. There's different ones that sort of some shuffled only themselves, some shuffle the entire graveyard. You want the entire graveyard to go
if
you want it, right? It's my own mill protection. Am I going to accidentally mill myself out?
Hopefully not.
It usually doesn't happen. So I usually don't worry about it, but if a deck was dedicated towards self-mill and stuff, you might be worried about it.
Yeah.
Okay. And then this, the last category is just like other good stuff. So there's always going to be a few cards that you're like, this card is so good. It's probably going in the deck, but it doesn't really fit in a specific category.
Skullclamp, we've talked about a few times already. Obviously just one of the best cards you can put in this deck.
Yeah.
With the Locust God alone, even without the Locust God. It's a great card.
But with the Locust God, it's ridiculous. But yeah, even with just the Eternalized part, I think it would be fine because with Sack Outlets, you could still turn those Eternalized creatures into cards. Thrasios is a card. By the way, buy some Thrasios. I'm putting that card in like every deck.
You know, just buy the partner commanders.
Yeah, true.
I think they're all just great worth. Thrasios is nuts.
Thrasios is an incredible card. Basically, he just starts going into every deck I have that has Simic.
Well, ramps you too.
Yeah, and Thrasios is great with a lot of mana or infinite mana.
Right.
And which the deck is already trying to do.
Right. He's one of the few cards where its activated ability is just straight colorless mana.
Yeah.
Or so it's generic mana.
It's 4 generic mana. You scry one, and then you reveal the top card of your library. If it's a land card, you put it on the battlefield. Tap. Otherwise, you put it into your hand. If you have unlimited mana, you put all your lands onto the battlefield and draw your entire deck.
Whoops.
Obviously, you don't have to do that. You can just put most of your lands and draw most of your deck. But that card can sort of win by itself with unlimited mana, which we're already trying to do. And it's also just good value otherwise in a deck that's just creating a ton of mana as one of its pillars.
Yeah.
So I really like Thrasios in the deck.
A new card from Hour of Devastation, Mirage Mirror. Now, this is one of the cards I think I'm just going to put in every single deck I own.
So we got an email recently from DJ who runs Jumbo Commander, which, to my shame, I was not super familiar with that channel before, but as a result, I checked it out. Very cool channel. I would encourage you to go check out Jumbo Commander on YouTube. And he recently did a video, and this is the reason why I put it on the list. We heard about him. I went over to his page. His most recent video was sort of an EDH review of just this card, Mirage Mirror, which I'll read real quick. It's 3 mana for an artifact. You can pay 2, and Mirage Mirror becomes a copy of target artifact, creature, enchantment, or land until end of turn.
Or land?
Yeah.
What?
It's crazy. So I watched his video, and I had thought Mirage Mirror is going to be pretty sweet, but man, DJ came up with a ton of crazy stuff you can do with this card. I think you're right. I think this is like a...
It's just one of those staple cards.
It does insane things because it turns into something and then it's not that thing after that turn. So if you turn it into even like just a Basalt Monolith,
yeah,
it'll untap. It just gives you one extra mana. That's just a mana rock for that turn because it costs 2 to turn it into a Basalt, but that taps for 3. Mana Vault or something. Not just that, though. It can do things where... It's like, oh, I want another doubling season right now because I have one out. 2
yeah,
mana, I've got
point.
Another doubling season, yeah, and now I play something. Even more crazy stuff. I don't want to steal DJ's thunder. You should go over to his channel and check
out. Well, it's great. It's like it can fix your mana because it can change into a land or change into an opponent's Chromatic Lantern or
also
an
like,
enchantment creature. The fact that it does artifact, creature, enchantment, or land is absurd.
Dark Depths because it won't have the counters because it gets the counters when it comes into play.
Yeah.
So you just get Merit Lage. Oh, man. It's just a really good card. Mirage Mirror is just one of those shenanigan-y cards that just...
It's absurd and limited, too. Yeah. And I'm sure it's going to be really good in even standard.
It's one of those cards that's just going to do things that you didn't even think of. You're going to have it in play, and you're going to look around, and you're going to like, holy crap. I'm going to copy your thing, and then watch what happens. Like, yeah. And it breaks the format in a really interesting way in that you can have 2 of things you never would be able to have, like doubling seasons and things like that. So,
right.
That's just a card that, you know... It's
worth it.
Yeah, I think it would be. I think it would go really well in general with a lot of the shenanigans that you're trying to have go on. So
the last thing I put in here is you can put a lot of board wipes in this deck because your gods are coming back to your hand when they die, but the people's creatures won't.
Yep.
And you get them in the graveyard.
Yeah. So you'd want like a lot of destroy all creatures type of deals.
If there was a deck for Bantu's Last Reckoning, it'd be this one because you're making infinite mana all the time or a ton of mana.
And you're making it with mana rocks and creatures.
Yeah,
you're untapping your lands with creatures.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It might be really good for a lot of the doesn't untap, your lands don't untap next turn type stuff. Okay. Whew. This is a hard episode. You know, this is like, you have to talk about more cards than for a normal regularly tuned deck because you're not just talking about the cards in the deck, you're talking about a bunch
options,
of cards that could be in the deck.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we've explored a bunch of different ideas for how the deck could work. So Jimmy, let me ask you, what do you think? Which way would you be leaning if you were building this deck?
I'm leaning towards one of the 4 colored commanders. I think something like Idris, Maelstrom Weeder might be really fun, just because...
That's the whiteless?
Yeah, it's the whiteless one, so you won't be able to play the white cards, but you do have Grixis plus green, so you get your doubling season shenanigans. Also, you get just double Cascade.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems pretty good. Oh, I mean, sorry, you get single Cascade. But, I mean, like, I don't know, like, you're already playing huge spells with a ton of mana costs. You could Cascade from a god into another god because there's 6 mana, 5 mana spells.
Oh, that'd be so sweet.
Yeah.
Play my Locust God,
get
my
another
Scarab god.
Yeah. And I feel like every card in this deck has so much value that you would just want to cast almost everything you get off of it. Because we were talking about wheel effects or mana rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Or like doubling seasons, you know, like all of these cards are all so synergistic. I think just the faster you can get them out onto the board, the better. Especially because the gods are all 6 mana, 5 mana plus. They're already expensive to get out. So you want to get really, you want to be able to like, booms, accelerate into it as fast as possible.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like that option. I'm sort of leaning towards Sliver Queen the more I think about it.
Yeah.
And activated abilities because Sliver Queen has an activated ability. It also makes tokens, so I could put in some of the token stuff, but not a ton.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's not
like
the problem
that.
With Sliver Queen is you put Sliver Queen in your command zone.
Everyone thinks
it's one of those.
Sliver
yeah,
deck.
They don't care what you say. It's like you can say that my Mizzix is really Goblin Tribal all you want. People are like, that's fine. After I kill you, I'll look at your deck and verify whether that's true or not.
I'm not going to let you get away with that otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. So I have a feeling that if I put Sliver Queen out, that would be the response, which is like, oh, really? It's not a Sliver deck? Well, after I kill you, well, I'll verify that.
I'll check that out. Yeah. Well, maybe you can just play Chromad again.
That's true, but it feels like a missed opportunity to not have, because there's enough commanders that would synergize with what the deck's doing that, you know, there's not a commander besides Nekusar that really cares about you drawing a lot of cards and dealing damage for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
You can go Kaidel Vial Smasher again.
Yeah, I did that. Yeah.
I mean, if you're going like the route of I want to sack stuff to kill people with Goblin Bombardment or just like ping people down, Vial Smasher is pretty good. And Kaidel, of course, I think
Thrasios would almost be better.
Yeah.
Yeah, just because. But I already have Vial Smasher.
Oh, you know, that's true. Thrasios. Yeah, that's true. That just seems to be a very good shell.
Yeah, that is a good
for
shell.
For a lot of different strategies.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to create infinite mana, that does seem like a good shell. But
yeah.
I don't know. What do you think? It's time for our to the listeners. What do you think about this deck? Well, do you think it's even a good idea? It might be a terrible idea. I don't know. Which way would you lean in as far as what effects would you put in it?
Mm-hmm.
And on a side note, like, what are your own brewing techniques? How do you go about making your own decks and sort of going about this process? Is it similar? Is it different? I think one of the great things about this show is that you can go through the comment section on any of our episodes that are sort of like this and just see a bunch of different takes and perspectives on what we talked about, which I've often gone through the comments and found things where I'm like, oh, I'm going to incorporate that now, or that's a really good way to look at things or think about things.
That's how we found out about Jumbo Commander.
There you go.
Yeah, and Dev. A lot of awesome channels. That was one of my favorite comment sections to read through. It was like, you missed X, Y, and Z. I'm like, I didn't even know they existed.
Oh, yeah, the community spotlight episode. Yeah, again, just great to have you guys commenting and sort of sharing your knowledge and your thoughts about stuff. So I would encourage you to do that. I would also encourage you to go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone, which is our affiliate link. And if you use that affiliate link, you will be supporting this show and things like game nights and making sure that it continues to happen and we're able to do it and keep the lights on and whatnot. And you want to be ordering all these gods, because even if you don't build the 3-god version, you probably want to build the 1-god version.
Or the 2-god version, yeah. Honestly. I could see a god doing it without the Scorpion God, because, yeah. You know.
The Scorpion God is almost like you could build this deck without it, but it's one card, so you might as well just be like, I'm playing all three, even though the Scorpion God. And, hey, that's a criticism you could say about this episode. We did not discuss stuff that synergizes with the Scorpion God that much.
It's true. I mean, but here's the thing. You just play Scorpion God, and occasionally it just is the best card in the game.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those cards that it's like, oh, the fact that you can just -1/-1 something is really good.
Really good. Especially if you have infinite mana, you just...
Yeah.
See? See how cool that looks? That's what, yeah. Okay. Awesome. You know what else is awesome?
Ultra Pro.
My go-to segue.
You know what else is, yeah, Ultra Pro. Yeah, you know what else is shiny? Ultra Pro. I was like, huh. Segway Man like stopped in his tracks. Was like,
Segway Man is really mailing it in today.
He's like kind of like giving you the side eyes. He rolls past like, what was that? Well, Ultra Pro is our other sponsor, obviously. They, you know, they came on during, I can't even stress how like cool it's been to work with them. I remember having sort of the, right now I'm on the Disney show. You've worked for Disney. We've always had this sort of like the man, we're working for the big higher ups. And Ultra Pro is like a huge company within the card game and collectible scene. But there's no like villainy to them at whatsoever. They like are dedicated. We've met them in person. We've gone to their to their warehouses and stuff. They helped us print our first playmat. Like, they couldn't have been more helpful and kind and like generous and wanting to better the community around them as much as possible. So I mean, like, they've been a great sponsor. I've had a blast working with them so far.
Yeah, and you can see that from the Eclipse sleeves, right? They had a lot of criticisms over the years about their sleeves, particularly. And they took that to heart, and they fixed that problem, and now they have the best sleeves that there are. So
yeah, and who knows how long it took them to figure that out too. Yeah. I mean, even a company that makes that many sleeves, if it took them that long to figure it out, like, you know, more props to them for taking the time and research and development to making the sleeves. And they came out with new colors, and they're always replying on Twitter to people. So yeah.
Yeah, they're great, and we're appreciative to have them as a sponsor. If you can pick up any of their products, it really does support the show. All right, it's time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of magic. Jimmy, we should have talked about it last week, but the show's out now.
The show is out now. In fact, the entire block is out now. If you own cable.
If you own cable.
If you own all of cable.
If you have the Disney networks, right? Which
most
people
do. Yeah,
so
it's the Disney network. So the Disney Channel has second channels, and one of them is Disney XD. It's where Gravity Falls was originally shown. You guys have seen me wear my Dipper hat in the show before. Every single night for the next 7 weeks, I think, is going to...
It'll be the next 6 at this point.
6, yeah. It may be longer. In fact, in 2 weeks or so, we may find out if it keeps going on. From 9 p.m. to 3 a.m.
For the next 93 weeks.
From 9 p.m. to 3 3 a.m., the channel Disney XD is transforming into sort of a late night, Nick at Night slash, not wanting to obviously compare it to Nickelodeon because it's Disney, but it's more kind of like an Adult Swim, but for the Disney XD brand. So they're calling it DXP, and it's all video game based. So obviously it's all targeted towards our generation, people that grew up playing video games. It's a move that I honestly think TV network should have done 5-6 years ago. You know, when G4 first came out and all those networks, they were so far ahead of the game, but they just didn't have the right viewership. So finally, networks, I think, are going to start jumping on this. You'll see there's a show. ESPN is doing a show on there. IGN's doing content on there. The Attack and other popular streaming websites doing stuff on there. And I have our show, which is every Saturday night at 9 p.m. It's the closest analog I've found so far. Is like, it's a gaming variety show similar to Saturday Night Live a little bit, because we're showing digital shorts. And we're interspersing that with new guests that come on every single time and playing video games on the couch with a live audience there. It's a lot of fun.
It's Disney, too. So the guests are like celebrities from YouTube. Yeah. They're professional athletes. There's all kinds of different people.
The first guest we had on was Nolan Gould, who plays Luke on Modern Family. And that guy is, you know, it's the
hilarious.
Same thing. Hilarious. But we'll also talk about the whole, like, you know, someone's a legit athlete or whatever. When they do something for just a little bit, you can tell. Like, if someone plays Magic and they tap their cards wrong, you're like, ah, he's not playing right. He hasn't played Magic for that long. She hasn't played Magic for that long. But Nolan starts talking about League of Legends and stuff. I'm like, this kid has like a billion followers on every social network. And he's nerding out about, you know, top lane.
Awesome.
Which is awesome. Yeah, we had Carl Anthony Towns is going to be in the future episode, the Minnesota Timberwolves' first pick. I think he's going to be the next
LeBron.
He's also
about 27 feet tall.
Yeah, 7 foot one.
The next LeBron, wow.
I think so. Who can box this kid out?
He's pretty good.
Tell me.
He's huge.
He's huge!
If you've never been around a 7 foot tall person, it's as if they're a different species. They're so, it's crazy how
it
big is that
crazy.
Is.
I said this and I realized I had to expand it, but I was like, there's no one within a 2,000 mile radius that's as big as this person. I was like, no, there's no one within like a 10,000 mile. He might be one of the biggest people in the world, and I'm standing right next to him. Pretty
that
cool.
Picture of you is funny because you come up to like, I don't know, the middle of the dragon on my shirt.
Yeah.
Like, it's like,
and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, so it's called Polaris Primetime. It's on Saturdays from 9 p.m. until what time? 3 a.m.?
Well, it's an hour-long show, and there's content every night at 9 p.m. I would encourage you guys to just watch the channel if you're interested in seeing what the content's like. There's like a gameplay show. It's a half hour every night. There's all sorts of different stuff. And, you know, even if all the content isn't for you, there's probably something in there that you'll like as a gamer. So I encourage you to check it out.
Yeah, it's going to be a great way also to expose yourself to some stuff that you wouldn't have found out about otherwise. Because all the time I'm, you know, when, like, Jimmy, I know you like the stuff I like, right? Mm-hmm. So when you like something, pretty much there's a really good chance that I'm going to like it too. So that's kind of, I think, how shows like this work. Pretty exciting, man. Very proud of you. It's pretty awesome.
Thank you. If you have YouTube TV in one of the four major cities, I think it's New York, LA, Chicago, and one other one, you can also see it on there.
Wow. You're not going to be able to avoid it.
I hope not.
You better not avoid it.
We need the ratings. Please watch.
Right. Yeah, please check it out. Support Jimmy. We're super proud of you, dude. That's awesome. All right. You know what else is awesome?
Awesome. You should just stop saying the word awesome.
You know what else is awesome? The Masters of Modern Podcast, our sister podcast. I'm not, it sounds like I'm making fun of them. I'm not.
No, you're not, because they are truly awesome.
They are awesome.
I didn't know what else was awesome until you told me, though. So thank you for informing me.
The Masters of Modern Podcast is our sister podcast, Alex Hessler and Ben Bateman. They talk about the modern format and all things competitive magic.
Yep.
You should definitely check those dudes out as well. They're really smart and they know a lot of things about modern. I even listen to the show and I don't even play it. So modern, I mean.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's how good it is.
It's great though. They talk about all sorts of stuff. Sometimes they do like tournament prep, you know, like stuff
That I love stuff like that. Where, yeah. And they'll have a pro on to talk about Limited every once in a while or something like that. And also Ben recently got into Commander. So they talk about Commander a little bit.
Oh, that's right. So Ben built his first Commander deck
that
and
makes me
beat
feel proud.
You
he
with
took
it.
Me down in an epic game. One of the great, it's just so fitting, of course, that the first time he really plays Commander would be like such a great game because
such
the universe
game.
Just wants to hook him into playing Commander. That's what that proved to me. Anyway.
Great, great guys. Make sure you check out.
You know what else is great?
Or awesome.
Our editor.
Terry Robertson. I don't know if you all saw our GP Vegas episode, but Terry shot 90% of the footage in that episode, and I would check it out. You know, we did a great job covering all of GP Vegas. You get to see what it really is. A nice trip to see what Vegas was all about, whether or not you should come out next time. Hint, hint, you should. But yeah, a big thanks to Terry, as always, being the editor of the show, making the video versions that you can see at youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast. We talked about a lot of cards this episode, so Terry put in a lot of hours to get all those cards up in your face so you can read them, because we don't always explain them very well. Like, my Mana Echoes explanation this episode was god awful.
It makes a lot of mana. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, it just makes a ton of mana. I may not even really know how it works.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, sharing creature types adds some mana. All right, another big thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who we met at GP Vegas, at Living Cards MTG on Twitter. He is the number one guy to go to if you want to see some awesome card animations. He's worked for Channel Fireball now, Wizards, us.
He did that new animation of the Game Nights logo.
Make sure you check out the last episode of Game Nights. It's a little bit slow on the views because it was released during a holiday week.
Yeah, it's still doing okay. But yeah, you should check it out if you haven't seen it. We play the Commander Anthology.
With Cassius Marsh.
Yep, and our buddy Josh Kim. So check that out, and that's it. No segue.
No segue. So we just end the show at some point.
Okay. You know what else ends the show? I gotta think of a new segue. Besides, you know what else?
You know what else? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You know what's a good way to end the show? By saying, see you guys next time.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.